This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play via the iHeartRadio app.
You know, we're going back into their barn, and, you know, we're going to approach it the same way we did the first two games. You know, I think the last game was a one-off from both teams. You know, for us, it's all about obviously winning hockey games, and the way we did that last game, I'm very proud of the way we responded after being down 4-2. You know, we got some cleanup to do, obviously, going into tomorrow. These are the games that you love to play. Clinching games are always fun, and we have a chance of, doing that tomorrow.
Yeah, Victor, clinching games, they're always the hardest ones to win, and Carolina should be ready to go right from the start as the Lightning are up 3-1. Game 5 tonight at 6:30. We will have wall-to-wall coverage right here on Lightning Power Play. So make sure you keep it tuned here. Adam Hall will be joining us in about 15 or 20 minutes, Lightning broadcaster, former NHLer. And we'll talk to him about being up and being down in a series as a player. That mindset that you have when you're in control, what to expect from the opposing team, and also when you're down 3-1, what is the mindset, especially early on? I also want to ask him, let me bring in my broadcast partner this afternoon, the radio voice of the Lightning, Dave Michigan. Of course, I'm Greg Linnelli, along with Steve Ersnick. That this whole goaltending carousel, so to speak, Dave, that we're seeing across the NHL, there's talk that maybe Tuukka Rask may not play in Boston's next game. Some of that might be because he's not 100%, but he was replaced in Boston's game last night. Swayman got the start in the third period. Rask allowed 4 goals. Tuukka Rask, for the most part, I think is one of the better goaltenders in the league and has been for quite some time. But there we go again. Bruce Cassidy maybe opening up that can of worms. And
well, that was only one thing Cassidy talked about in his post-game, right?
He didn't get fined for that. He got fined $25,000 for ripping the officials. And talking about the Islanders and saying, you know, look, they're not as – they're what do they call them? Angels?
Saints.
Some Saints. He called them Saints.
They're not the New York Saints.
They're not the New York Saints. But I want to talk to Halsey about goaltending and how that has evolved over the years.
Rask story related to the fact that he may not be 100%?
That's what I said. It may not be a 100% thing.
And I got to be honest, Greg. So the Islanders scored 5 last night on, 19 shots?
The goals that they scored
were either shots in which guys just picked corners. Mm-hmm. I mean, Barzal scores on the power play on Rask in the first period. And I watched the goal. I'm like, boy, Rask's got to stop that. That's a short side shot, and there's not much of a screen. And then you see the replay. I mean, Barzal puts it into a tiny little open spot. And when guys go down in the butterfly, like most goalies do, there is some available room at the top of the net. There's just not a lot of it, especially on the short side. Barzal found it. The Eberle goal, which was also a power play goal. And this is what got Cassidy incensed, I think.
Well, isn't that the one where Tenorti breaks a stick,
3 power play goals. Yeah, but Eberle puts it into the upper corner. And the other two goals that Rask allowed anyway, guys are wide open in front. Wide open in front. And the goal that Swayman allowed to Brock Nelson, he's wide open in front. So it's the same conversation we had about Vasilevskiy with the Panthers in that series. Like, if you're going to give NHL shooters good looks from prime areas, some pucks are going to go in. And I think Cassidy, I didn't hear his whole press conference, but he acknowledged, like, the defense. And I don't know if he's talking about his defense men or his team defense, or team defense, I should say. But I think he was talking about his defensemen. He said, we had some problems on the back end.
He's right.
I mean, he's right. He was giving up. That's not Boston Bruins hockey to give Josh Bailey an open look from 6 feet out, you know, right at the hash marks. Nelson wide open in front on little plays where guys are not tracking for the Bruins. So I look at that game last night and like, okay, the Islanders scored 5 goals on 19 shots. I don't know how many of those goals, if any of them, are on the two goalies.
You know, what's interesting about Boston, big picture, I was talking about this with Jay Rutcher the other day from 95.3 WDAE, and we were talking about that goaltending debate we've had, but he also was talking about Bruce Cassidy, in his opinion, I don't want to put words in Jay's mouth. We can have him on the show to talk about it. But he always felt like Cassidy, good coach, doesn't necessarily, I'm not talking specifically this game last night, because to your point, not much you can do about those goals. Bruce Cassidy is
a good
coach.
Well, maybe he feels that his goalie should have stopped the ones that went into the top of the
maybe,
net.
Maybe.
Like, if you have often said, like, sometimes you need your goalie to come up with a save, meaning that it's
and
not one
fair.
That should be automatic and maybe really, yeah. really difficult.
Well, we're
but
spoiled.
The goalie bails out his team. I'm just
we're
saying
spoiled.
Those
yeah,
were
yeah.
really good shots
sure.
the Islanders put into the net.
And we're spoiled because we see Vasi make a lot of those high danger saves more than other goaltenders. But understand, Tampa Bay is more of the exception than the rule when it comes to goaltending. His point was, and I don't know how you quantify this at all, Dave, Cassidy, in terms of making adjustments, not as great as maybe his record would indicate, because he's a very successful head coach. What I always am curious about with Boston is when you take a look at this run that they've been on over the last 7-8 years, basically Marchand and Bergeron era, now you throw in Pastrnak with a guy like Tuukka Rask, and you also had Chara as part of that core. Do you almost feel like one cup wasn't enough for that group? Because they've always been at the top of the league. They've always been a really good regular season team. I can speak just from covering them when they took on the Penguins in that Eastern Conference final and got to the Stanley Cup final. They were a machine. But it does feel like the one thing holding them back has always been maybe some depth. You felt like this year might have been a little different. I just feel like looking back, Boston, maybe along with the Caps, might have been a team during this era where you were expecting maybe a bit more in the postseason relative to the talent that they've had and how good they were in the regular season. And I don't know what that would be. Do you think it's coaching? Do you think it's a lack of depth? It probably speaks to how hard it is to win a cup. It's why I think when we look at the Lightning right now and this golden era that we're in, starting with that Stanley Cup run against the Chicago Blackhawks in 2014-2015, that while things are rolling along, you want to pick up a couple of cups along the way, because if not, you end up being a team like the Bruins where you get one cup in a decade and you have yourself probably asking, should we have had more? Because I feel like every year we're talking about the Boston Bruins being a really good team and you know, they kind of fizzle out in the playoffs.
So we're talking about a 10-year span, basically, with this being the 11th year. They won their cup in 2011, and they were starting to improve in the years prior to that.
Yeah.
The year before is actually the year they blew a 3-0 series lead to the Flyers and became one of four teams. They were the third at that time, and then San Jose had it happen to them against the Kings a couple of years later. But at the time, they were the first team in a generation to blow a 3-0 series lead, and then they came back and won the Stanley Cup the next year. So let's start there. So you got 10 years, 2011 to 2020. And the constants there have been specifically Bergeron and Marchand. Marchand, I think, was a rookie in 2011, the year they won the cup. Maybe his second year with the Bruins, and Bergeron was there. You know, Tuukka Rask was there, but, you know, Tim Thomas. The goalie the year they won the cup. And he and Rask kind of flipped back and forth until Rask basically became the man. And I think it's hard to just lump the Bruins' 10-year run here into kind of one category, which, as you know, I don't like one category, because I think that, you know, we've had some changes over the year. Like, Claude Julien was their coach for a good number of those seasons. There were also 2 years in a row in that 10-year span where the Bruins missed the playoffs, 2015 and 2016. And that was part of the precipitation of the coaching change. So Cassidy has been the coach for the kind of the second half of the decade after Julien had them for the first half of the decade. But the bottom line is they have reached the Stanley Cup final in 3 of those 10 years.
They have.
Though they missed the playoffs in 2 of the 10. And so I think there were some years where they played very, very well. And, you know, you get to the Stanley Cup final and lose, and you're losing to really good teams. I mean, can you say that you should have won more? I mean, if you're getting there, that's that's quite an accomplishment. I mean, it's hard to quibble with those two seasons, 2013 and 2019. There were a couple of years where they did not live up to expectations. The 2012 team actually had a better regular season record, and they got eliminated by the Capitals in a huge upset in the first round, I think. 2014, they won the President's Trophy, and Montreal knocked them off in seven games. That was a huge upset as well and a pretty significant disappointment. So you've got some great success-type years, and you got a couple of years where they failed to live up to expectation. Since then, though, like they've run into the Lightning a couple of times, and that's been a tough matchup for the Bruins because the Lightning are just as good as the Bruins, right? And they had to play. Now, I'm not saying that Yaroslav Halak didn't play well last year in the playoffs. He did. But let's remember, you know, they did not have Tuukka Rask in the bubble last year. The 2018 series, I mean, it was a second-round series. I know it was five games. That was a very close series. Very close series. So I think some of it is just like when I talked about Detroit. Remember, I used that story about Detroit in the first 20 years that they had made the playoffs consecutively and they had the run go to 25. And I remember looking this up in year 21, looking back at the previous 20, they'd won four cups. And you're like, boy, that's amazing. That's incredible. But they also lost in the first or second round in 12 of those 20 years. So it just goes to show that it's really hard. It's really hard to have success in the playoffs. And tying this to the Lightning a little bit, I saw a stat. Now, I'm not predicting they're going to win tonight. I'm not saying they're going to win the series. But if the Lightning can get past Carolina, that means in five of the last 7 years, the Lightning have reached what we'll call the Final Four. That's amazing. That is an amazing accomplishment if they can do it. And, you know, until last year, they hadn't won a cup. So people are like, will the Lightning ever win a cup? I mean, it is so hard. It's hard to make the playoffs, and it's really, really hard to go deep in the playoffs. You need a lot of things to go your way, and you need to play extremely well on top of that. Look at Carolina. How different would the series look if they had Trocheck and Niederreiter for the whole series? Maybe it wouldn't look any different. I mean, they did lose two games at home when Trocheck was in the lineup. I know he didn't play the third period of game two, but I mean, injuries are a big part of it. There's no question. And a good segue, because it looks like Carolina is going to try to have not just Fogle back in, but Niederreiter and Trocheck as well.
It's a sign, and it's obvious. It's a sign of desperation too, because I just don't know how healthy those guys are going to be. You know, that's one of those things where guys, let's give it a go. If you can tape me together, I'll get out there.
But let me just put the finishing touches on the Bruins. The Bruins have been an excellent team. They've been an elite team. There are a lot of other teams in the league would like to have the 10-year run that the Bruins have had, this being year 11. They are not out of the series. I think it's certainly possible that they could win games 6 and 7 and advance to the next round into the Final Four. And I think Bruce Cassidy is a phenomenal coach. I think he's a terrific coach. I'm not quite sure where Jay feels he doesn't make adjustments. I confess that, you know, I'm not zeroing in on all these Bruins games to figure it out. But, you know, when you've got, I don't know what the analogy should be, a bazooka. Is that what we're going to call Bergeron, Pasternak, and Marchand? Like an incredibly dangerous weapon in your arsenal. You're going to use that. And if you have a little bit of a soft underbelly underneath that, then yeah, you might say we're gonna spread the wealth here. But I can't find any fault with him keeping that top line together because they are so dominant. They are so dangerous as a line. They complement each other so well, and they do consistently not only a lot of the heavy lifting, but they are consistently doing the lifting. Like, it's not just you're asking them to do heavy lifting. They're actually lifting. Like, Pasternak continually produces in big moments. Marchand continually produces in big moments. And what can you say about Bergeron? I mean, this guy is just, he is, in my opinion, he's going to go down as one of the greatest all-around players in NHL history for everything that he does and as long as he is doing it. Selke finalist again this year. Deservedly so. For me, a first ballot Hall of Famer, without any question. So, I mean, I don't know what kind of adjustments that the Bruins should make. Are you suggesting they break up that top line? I wouldn't. I would try and find the other lines. You know, challenge them to do a little bit more. But
yeah, well, and they get Taylor Hall, and then you know that should.
He had a good first round against Washington. Islanders are a really good defensive team.
They are. They're a team that relies on structure. They've got really good players up and down the lineup.
Yeah, but they have not quieted that top line. The Bergeron line has been very productive in that series.
Does Pasternak remind you a bit of Kucherov? The way he can shoot the puck, he can dangle it.
Yeah, I think Pasternak looks to shoot more than Kucherov.
Yeah.
And maybe Pasternak is as good of a passer as Kucherov, although I'm not certain of that, but he doesn't look to pass as much.
He likes to shoot. He's incredible.
By the way, talking about great coaching, I don't know if you watched the end of the Bruins Islanders game last night. So it was 5-2 Islanders and the Bruins make a push and they make it 5-4 and they pull the goalie and it's literally like the closing seconds and Bruins have the puck. It's 6-on-5 and it's in the offensive zone. And there's a play at the point. I think it's Krejci. Krejci gets it at the right point, or maybe Krejci was at the right circle. But basically, they moved it around, and whoever the guy was at the right circle made a touch pass into the slot. And we know who's waiting in the slot because we've seen him score from there time and time and time and time again, Patrice Bergeron. He always seems to get open, and the Bruins always seem to find him in that hash mark area. And it was set up for him. Like, bing, 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 around the horn, puck of the circle, into the slot. Bergeron's there, and Brock Nelson comes right in there, knocks the puck away, and the Islanders get it clear. If you don't think good coaching matters, like, they were ready for that. They were ready for that play. And as a result, Bergeron never even got the puck. Because he can score from there. He scored a lot of goals from that spot. I was so impressed with how the Islanders handled that play because, you know, like you can almost see it in slow motion coming, like around the horn and then that one touch pass into the slot and Bergeron with the one timer and it's in the top of the net. And it just didn't happen because the Islanders defended it perfectly.
Do you think Barry Trotz is the best X's and O's coach in the game today?
That's probably an unfair question because I don't know enough about other coaches.
Dave, who said anything about fair?
But you know how highly I regard Barry Trotz as a coach who can teach defense.
It's been incredible.
And other stuff too. I mean, clearly it's not just defense, but
what's even more
like the proof is in his resume, how he, everywhere he goes, the team that he takes over becomes one of the top defensive teams in the league. And he had a good retort to Bruce Cassidy's complaint about the penalties. He's like, you know, I happen to notice that we're one of the least, tongue in cheek. He's like, I just happened to look. We were one of the least penalized teams during the regular season as well. Their penalty kill has been horrendous, though, in the playoffs. I looked it up this morning. I'm like, how many penalties have they taken? They're averaging, I'm going to probably get this wrong because they don't have it right in front of me. They've played, 11 games, and they're shorthanded in like the mid-20s. So that's like just about two a game, a little more than two a game. That's extremely low. But their penalty kill is at 65%. So they have helped themselves by not being shorthanded a lot. Now they face two really good power play opponents, Washington and Boston. I'm sorry, Pittsburgh and Boston, two really good power plays there. And you can speak to the first round series. I don't know how many power play goals the Penguins scored. But clearly they have had trouble killing penalties when they have been shorthanded, which probably is adding fuel to the fire for Cassidy when he's looking at some of the non-calls he feels were happening in that game.
Well, and we have an opportunity here with Tampa Bay and Carolina, Boston and New York for those series to wrap up pretty soon. I mean, the Lightning have an opportunity. You know, we always talk about
they have an opportunity.
You do have an opportunity. Carolina, you feel like, is a wounded team with some injuries, maybe some questions about goaltending. And I will go back to this, Dave, because I do think Tampa Bay wins this series. We can have debates about when that will be. I'm thinking it is tonight. But I think Carolina is going to look back, and they are going to look at that second period of Game 4 and say, boys, we had it. We had an opportunity to tie this series up. We were playing the way we played. Dave, I think we talked about it yesterday. Probably their best 15 minutes of hockey in this series happened in that period. And they really threw Tampa Bay off their game. They've got a 4-2 lead on the road. You've got all this momentum. And then you go and you take some penalties and the Lightning convert. I think that is going to be something we look back, the defining moment of this series. I think it deflates you. Now, that may not be the case tonight. Carolina may will themselves to a win. They may rally behind their crowd and just bring a really good effort tonight. But I also think that loss, that rips you inside, because you can't give a team like Tampa Bay many chances to get back in the game when they are down, because they are a championship team. I do think mentally they are as strong as anybody, considering what they've experienced over the last few years. I think it's molded them into this team that doesn't really wilt under pressure. You know, you have an elite goaltender who can keep you in the game, even if you're down by two, and you have just enough elite playmakers that can get you back in the game if the other team makes a mistake. And I think we saw that in the second period of Game 4. So I do think while this game is at home for Carolina and they should be able to feed off the crowd and have a lot of adrenaline flowing early on, you know, Trocheck's going to try and go. Maybe we'll see. Niederreiter may try to go. We'll see. How effective will those guys really be? And is there any hangover from Game 4 to Game 5 when it comes to Carolina's play? Particularly, Dave, if Tampa Bay is able to get a lead early on.
Well, if you're Carolina, what are you taking out of Game 4? Are you taking out the disappointment of blowing a 4-2 lead, and are you feeling discouraged about that? Or are you taking out that 14-minute span when you dominated the game and you're like, we just need to do that? Understanding the Lightning may not react exactly the same way, and the Lightning may be able to handle that surge from the Hurricanes, if there is one tonight, better than they did during the second period in Game 4. But I guess I kind of feel like the Hurricanes' makeup, and I think they do reflect a little bit their head coach in terms of kind of his demeanor and his drive. I think Brind'Amour, I don't know if the quote was yesterday or this morning, but he said, you know, we always work hard, no matter what. Basically, he said that. And it's true. Like, they bring that very high work ethic regardless. And so probably if you're Carolina, you're saying, let's try and build on what we did in Game 4 that was positive and be more disciplined, certainly. And let's see if we get a boost from these guys who are hopefully coming back. Looking at some of the Carolina reporters covering the team, it sounds like of the three, which is interesting because Fogel did play in Game 4, but of the three, it sounds like Niederreiter is probably the most likely to play, and he has not played in the series.
That would be a big lift.
That would be a big lift. Sure. He led their team in even strength goals during the regular season.
Player.
He's been a fairly consistent 20-goal scorer in
and
the
let's
NHL.
Face it, for a team, especially with the injuries they've had here recently, they've basically been a one-line team in terms of just being a threat most nights. I mean, the Aho line has been as good as we've seen. I mean, they've created some problems for the Lightning. Jordan Staal we also talked about has helped give them a bit when it comes to depth scoring and maybe their last game getting a couple goals from defensemen. Look, we can help them. We have talked about this. I mean, they have some capable guys back there. Dougie Hamilton, especially with the injuries up front, is going to and was going to have to be a guy, Dave, I thought, not only that had to defend well in this game, which isn't his strong suit, but I was looking for him to be more of a factor offensively through four games. It's not to say he hasn't, but you know, he's their Victor Hedman offensively, and it just, I don't know, maybe my expectations were too high. I just thought they were going to be, he was going to be more of an impactful player, and we have not seen that as much. But then again, all it takes is one game for that to turn around.
Yeah,
I'm curious to see if their back end gets a little more involved tonight, Dave, and helps try and create some situations where they can get Vasi moving a bit or just get some traction in front, because I mean he's basically stopping everything he's seeing and then some. So I'm curious to see how Carolina is going to attack. You mentioned, you know, what are they going to take away from game four and maybe use that to their advantage in game five. I actually think the way they played in game two and that, or game four in the second period, I actually think that's going to be harder to do tonight for an extended period of time. I just think that's one of those things. It's like a player in basketball who just gets in a zone. You know, it comes quickly. It can also leave you pretty quickly. I don't know if they can sustain that for 30 minutes tonight. Maybe they do. Their level of play was as good as we've seen a team take on Tampa Bay in that second period.
Yeah.
I just think that's going to be really hard to do for an extended period of time tonight. But they may prove me wrong, Dave. I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm kind of curious to see if now that the series is back in Raleigh, will the feel of the game mirror what we saw in games one and two, which was kind of like the third period of game four for the Lightning, where they did lock it down and time and space, at least for Carolina, was hard to come by. Are we going to see that again, or are we going to see some of the more wide open play that we saw in game three and certainly for much of game four? We don't know. That's why they play the games, right?
Yeah, time will tell. We've got a couple of questions starting to trickle in. I want to get to those. Why don't we take a break? We'll get Adam Hall, hopefully on next segment. If not, we'll take some of these questions. Your thoughts on the series tonight? Is this going to be it for Carolina? Or do you think they extend the series a bit? Who starts in nets? We've had those conversations before. Rod Brindamore, of course, not letting anybody know, but we'll give you our thoughts a little bit more when we return. He is Dave Michigan. I am Greg Linnelli. It is Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play.
This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play on the iHeartRadio app.
By the way, if there is a game six, Dave, it'll be Thursday at 6:30.
Yeah, I mentioned to Phil that when this series had the 2 days between games, every series other than the North Division series had one break of 2 days in between games. And when that happened, this series, for the rest of the series, will fall on the same day as the Colorado-Vegas series. So I said to Phil, I said, you know what that means, that we'll be getting the earlier starts. And he got a big smile on his face.
He loves those early starts. I like yes. Those early starts too. Those are good.
Yeah, when you have two series that are basically in the East, you see often what happened last night. I think the Bruins Islanders started at 6:30, but the Montreal game started at 8. So one game is getting the later start, relatively later Eastern time.
Relatively later.
Yeah. But that Vegas Colorado game is starting at what, 9 Eastern? Mm-hmm. So.
All right, let's get to Adam Hall. We told you we were going to have him on to talk about this series and so much more. Lightning broadcaster and former NHLer joining us here on Power Lunch. Greg Linnelli along with Dave Michigan. And Adam, first off, man, thanks so much for coming on. And, you know, we were talking a lot in that first segment about Carolina being down 3-1. And as a guy who's been in both scenarios with an opportunity to clinch a series and also trying to live to fight another day, from Carolina's perspective, What is being said, do you think, in that locker room, and how much will the first 10, 15 minutes of this game dictate how maybe the game will be played?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. And you're exactly right. I think the start of this game, the first period, the first 5-10 minutes really are going to be crucial. If they're able to get that crowd rocking, if they're able to score first or you know, big hits and get the atmosphere on their side and working for them in their building right away, I think that's going to be huge for kind of, you know, their momentum and just their confidence, because, you know, they're going to be trying to come out playing desperate. I guarantee that's what they're talking about. Their season is on the line. They're an aggressive team. They want to, if they're going to make mistakes, they're going to be talking about trying to make them as aggressive as possible, playing smart, but, you know, having the energy, playing, you know, and just going after it rather than sitting back and wait and see. It's going to be, you know, the Lightning are going to have to expect Carolina's absolute best. You know, it's like they're a cornered animal right now. And so, you know, they're going to come out playing that desperate hockey.
Yeah, Greg mentioned that you've been involved in a number of series. I remember the one with the Lightning in 2011 in that first round, and that was a little different because the Lightning were down to Pittsburgh 3-1, but Game 5 was in Pittsburgh. It was not a home team for the team that was down 3-1. And what do you remember about those Game 5 experiences? Because you had one with Pittsburgh, too, in 2008, right, in the final, down 3-1 to Detroit. And that was that crazy triple overtime game. What do you remember about how the team handled? That was a road game in both those instances. But what do you remember about how your team handled it and ended up winning Game 5 in both those instances? And with the Lightning coming back and winning the series.
Yeah, absolutely. And great question. On both those teams, in both those situations, it really tests the character that you have in that locker room. And there was always guys where there was no panic. There were guys that really were able to step up. And it wasn't just one guy. For every situation, there may have been a different guy to say, you know, the right thing at the right time to keep people calm. You know, when guys get too amped up, there was somebody there to calm them down. When there wasn't enough energy, there was someone there to get everybody excited and get them going, you know, whatever was needed. So good teams find a way to have that versatility, to have that depth of whatever situation comes your way. There's somebody to say the right thing, somebody to do the right thing, whatever situation on the ice. And that's what you find as it goes along. Everybody faces so much intensity and so much pressure that if there's a crack in a team, it'll be exposed in the Stanley Cup playoffs and more as it moves along. Now, obviously, there's injuries and different things that pop up, but just situations and how teams can stick together, how teams can just believe and have that faith and work for each other at such a high level for such an extended period of time. So that's the biggest thing I remember was there was always every guy that was going over the boards believed, and every guy was just working harder and harder the next shift because they were seeing everybody just kind of raise their level. And that's what was, you know, that's what's so great about this time of year. It really forces teams and players to be there, you know, to find another level.
Adam Hall joins us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play. Adam, the Lightning don't have a question mark about their goaltender. The Canes do. As a guy who played, how comforting was it to know goaltending wasn't an issue when you had a number one? And conversely, on teams maybe where there wasn't a legit number one, could that unnerve guys a bit, knowing that from game to game, the goaltending situation may be a little different?
I don't know if it, I mean, if you have two good goaltenders to choose from, I think that helps. Yeah, I mean, you have confidence in whoever you have, especially when you're, you know, this far into the season, into the playoffs. Having said that, if there's just one guy and you know there's no doubt in anyone's mind that that's the guy, I just feel like, you know, this time of year, it's about reducing variables. You want to know what you can count on, who you can count on, and it's just, you know, you have the entire team pulling in the same direction. It's one less distraction, maybe, to be, you know, thinking about, for the media to be asking players about, for the players to just, you know, have to deal with. It's just one less thing almost. So in that sense, I think that it can, you know, be a little bit of a benefit when you do have that one guy that you just, yeah, I mean, there's no question. Media doesn't have to ask about it because it's just a known entity. It's a known, you know, factor that, you know, that's your go-to goalie. So, and the other part of it too is that when you see somebody kind of grab the reins and play that well, that they really steer the ship, that they take control of a series. I mean, how many times have we talked about over the years that goaltenders have the ability to absolutely steal games in the playoffs, to be that big of a difference in not just, you know, playoff games, but playoff series. And I mean, round after round, you know, you don't crown a Stanley Cup champion without saying how much that goal, how many games looking back that goalie stole, you know, for that team or kept them in it or, you know, gave them a chance to win along the way. So I think it's a critical position. I think, you know, it's good almost sometimes when you have, you know, maybe two to choose from as far as, you know, a really solid backup. But yeah, it's nice to have that kind of decision, you know, less of a controversy and distraction for sure.
One thing we talked about after game four was how Anthony Cirelli won a couple of big faceoffs to start power plays against Jordan Staal, and the Lightning ended up scoring shortly thereafter in that second period, the Kucherov goal and then the Stamkos goal to make it 5-4. What makes Jordan Staal so good on faceoffs, and to the best of your recollection, what was Cirelli doing to have success against him? Because he went 4-0 on power play faceoffs in game four, mm-hmm. Cirelli.
Yeah, and Jordan Staal is one of the toughest centermen, you know, to go against in faceoffs. Jordan Staal and I were actually we were the first penalty killing unit in Pittsburgh in that 2008, you know, Stanley Cup Finals run. And he's such a big body. He's such a smart player, and he just has so much leverage and so much strength on the puck. Those are some of the things that make him so difficult to beat. And having said that, Cirelli is kind of that combination. He's not maybe quite as big as Jordan Staal, but he combines that speed and power with, you know, and he's also a really smart player. And you're really seeing the evolution of Cirelli as, you know, I mean, he's always been kind of a two-way player. You always see the effort, the work ethic. You see the nose for the net to go into those, you know, hard areas that we talk about during playoffs and in big moments. But on faceoffs, I mean, it's the ability. It's one of the purest. I had somebody when I was early in my career, you know, just say it was one of the purest one-on-one battles in the game, where 20,000 fans are waiting to see what two players go against each other and what happens. And I remember thinking, what a cool way to describe that. And so every face-off, when you see, you know, Cirelli in a moment like that, I mean, we talk about, you know, goaltender has the ability to calm the team down when they just make a save look easy, or just they calm the entire play down. It may be last minute of a game and you're up a goal and they just make a save look routine. Well, when centermen like, you know, Cirelli are in those situations, you're penalty killing, you're in your own end, you're whatever it may be, and you're able to just win a faceoff clean and maybe get it out and ice it right away and break that immediate momentum, that's huge. That's a huge sigh of relief almost. It's not obviously the entire penalty kill, but it's just one little kind of factor, one little step towards building that confidence the teammates have. That your teammates want you on the ice. If they know Cirelli's going to win that on his side or whoever's going to win it, you know, it builds. It's another kind of, you know, block in the pyramid of building that foundation of, okay, confidence. We've got somebody that can handle these situations, and we believe we have a better chance, you know, of winning this game when they're on the ice in that situation.
Adam Hall joins us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play. Adam, it looks like Vinny Trocheck, Nino Niederreiter are going to try and go tonight. We'll see. They're going to, you know, that's going to be a game time decision. But I'm curious, can you take us through what it's like for guys like that in the playoffs who are injured that are trying to come back and are going to be a game time decision, all the stuff going on behind the scenes to get those guys ready? And conversely, for the Lightning, knowing that those guys, if they do play, are injured, are you trying to be a little bit more physical with those guys when you see them on the ice within reason?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, you know, you're trying to be physical no matter what. You're trying to, you know, you're trying to be hard to play against. You're trying to make it as difficult for the opposing players as possible. But saying that, you don't want to step outside, you know, obviously the rules of the game, or you don't want to step outside what you're trying to do as a team and get off, you know, off your system or off your game plan. because that then you become not as focused as well. So there's a fine line with all the adrenaline and energy and the pressure of the situation to make sure you stay and play within your system aggressively and physically. But for those guys, when you are injured, it is the worst feeling in the world to not be with the group, with the team. You feel like you're just completely helpless, which is the worst, absolute worst feeling, as a player. And so I guarantee those guys are doing everything they can to get back. The trainers the team and the around the league are just, second to none. So the medical staff that they have available are, I'm sure working around the clock to do whatever they can to get those guys healthy, get them back, because they are such big pieces of that team.
Halsey, I'm not sure if you ever were part of a penalty kill that is as aggressive as Carolina's, and it's worked very well for the Hurricanes since the time Rod Brind'Amour has been head coach, but the Lightning have had success in the last two games of the series with quick puck movement, kind of using Carolina's aggressiveness against the Hurricanes and breaking down that penalty kill and getting open looks and goals. Do you think it's a matter, and I'm kind of asking from the Carolina perspective, is it a matter then of reeling some of that aggressiveness back in, or is it more the message of we just need to do what we do better so that we are not put in that situation and we get to the loose pucks first?
Yeah, I mean, I think even before that, if you're looking at a power play like Tampa's, especially when it's hot, your best penalty kill is staying out of the box and staying disciplined. So I think number one, that's probably what they're thinking along those lines. When they do get on the penalty kill, it's a fine line between, okay, do what we do no matter what, because, that's what we do well, and that's what, that's what a team is thinking. There are adjustments that they, that every team will make on the penalty kill within game. It's about probabilities, right? How do you put the opposing power play in a situation where they have the least probability of success, where they're least comfortable? How do you take away, one-timers? How do you cut the ice in half and shrink the rink, shrink the ice surface? How do you kind of corral them and angle them into areas, put them in areas where they're not as high of a scoring probability? So you want to be able to recognize those situations, and it's a calculated aggressiveness where, okay, if the pass wasn't perfect, for a one time, there's certain situations where you can go. And this is when you see the best penalty kills, especially come playoff time. It's not usually just one guy going, because you're already down a man. And if it's one at a time, then you're going to get one guy to position, and it's just not quick enough. When one guy goes, the trigger, and the other three guys, they anticipate off of each other so well. They have chemistry that is so developed throughout the course of a season and playoffs so far, that they'll be able to see one player go, and that's a trigger for all three to do, to react, to act or move a certain way, just based on that. So you'll see all the three, four guys moving in tandem based on whatever may happen. If there's a bad pass, as soon as it goes, it triggers all four guys at the same time. So when you see a penalty kill that's kind of one guy at a time, that's when the power play really does have time to be, they have time to get their head up, get comfortable, settle the puck, and find the passing lane. And when you give, the players in this league and any of the teams that are left that much, time, especially with guys all on their one-timers, able to find those seams, that's one of the things. So you really, again, Carolina, they are aggressive. They do have that ability to make that work for them, but they really are going to have to find that balance between being calculated with it of when to go and when not to go.
Adam Hall joins us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play. Speaking of the power play, Tampa Bay's has been dynamic. Of course, it runs through Nikita Kucherov. He's been tremendous, Adam. As a guy who killed a lot of penalties, how would you try and defend Tampa Bay's power play? Do you cheat over to Kucherov's side and just live with the consequences from Hedman, Stamkos, and Point? How do you go about defending it?
you're exactly. I mean, that's the question, and that's been the problem with opposing penalty kills. I mean, for not just this year, but for multiple years now. If you take away one, you're exactly right. Then Hedman passes to Stamkos, and it's a one-timer in the back of the net. So, or if you take away one of those, then it's Point, or then it's Kalorn back door. And it's very rare that you find five scoring options as well as five passing options on the same power play. I mean, so it really is. I mean, that's the battle. And that's why it can be such a huge difference maker in games when, especially, you know, I mean, when you see the closing games of series, you never know how the power plays are, you know, you hope that they're there. You hope that the referees just kind of see it and call it, but you never really know. So every game kind of has its own personality, and some games get, you know, tighter and there's fewer power plays. It's not something you can always count on, but when you do get in those situations, it's nice to know, again, that you kind of have that probability, you have that confidence that, you know, the guys can move it so well, have that ability, you know, to have success. And again, you know, it just instills confidence in the entire rest of the team as well.
Halsey, I'm wondering if you are surprised, that's the right word, that so many of the series in this year's playoff year, and I'm going to include both Lightning series in this category, have kind of jerked back and forth between really tight defensive hockey, which is what we usually expect in the playoffs, and some wide open hockey. And we've seen it in other series too. Is that surprising that even within a series, two teams can D up really well in one game, but then it's like the horses come out of the barn in another?
Yeah, and it really has been fun to watch, because it's every game kind of takes on its own personality as well. And so I think when you find two teams, and we'll talk, you know, just as far as Carolina and Tampa, they have such, I mean, you look up and down both rosters, they have so many high-end skill players that also can play solid team, you know, can play that, you know, that defense when needed. As I mean, we saw the 2-1 games earlier in the season, earlier in the series. And so it doesn't surprise me when there's always that chance, that ability of both teams to just kind of run away. I mean, if you're going to give up, if there's any holes in your defense, it's going to get exposed, and the other team can just, I mean, run away and score. You know, the score could be 4-2, you know, like for Carolina, or, you know, but if there's holes the other way, then look, it can end up, you know, 5-4, 6-4, you know, it can go right back the other way. So, you know, when you have that high-end talent, there's always that chance the game is just going to break wide open, you know, and that momentum, especially when you know, get one of the home team's crowds behind them, and they just are able to ride that momentum on whether it's power plays, even strength, it's tough to overcome that momentum sometimes. So, for both of these teams, it doesn't surprise me that the games have that chance to break away. But you'll see again, too, I mean, every playoff year, you'll see teams that have the offensive ability, but they find that way as a unit of, you know, 20 guys to be able to win, whether it's, you know, in all different types of situations. Games that have a lot of special teams, games that have no special teams, and it's just a tight defensive checking game. And it really, again, like, and that's why, that's what's so great about the Stanley Cup playoffs. It tests every area of your game, you know. So that's one of the things that really comes into focus this time of year, as far as, you know, hey, what type of game are we going to have? Well, it doesn't matter. We have the confidence. We've got penalty killers. We've got, you know, guys that can get done the power play. We've got goaltending. And if we have to play team defense, you see guys blocking shots, willing to do whatever it takes just to make sure that they win that game by, you know, a single goal.
Adam, last question. When you take a look at role players and guys who do a lot of gritty work in today's NHL, it's tough to, you know, put a price tag on that. But a guy like Barkley Goodrow, has he surprised you with how good he's been? Not only, you know, what he did in the regular season, but really come playoff time, hard to play against, physical. And I don't think it's a surprise when he came back into the lineup. The Lightning really looked like a different team, didn't they?
They did. And I think that he, along the way, has been a player that doesn't get nearly enough credit for their complete impact on the way this team plays. When he's in the lineup, the team looks, you know, grittier, more physical, but he's found this ability. He controls the puck. He can control the play. He makes plays. He's able to find ways to score goals in key situations. And he just makes it, he's hard to play against. He makes it miserable. If he's up against any of the other team's players, he can go again. You trust him going against. The coaching staff obviously trusts him going up against, you know, some of the best players in this league. And so you just see the team kind of take on I think they just have more confidence. When he's in a lineup, they just kind of add a little bit, just another dimension to their game. And again, it comes back to that depth. You know, everybody knows, okay, you're going to try and focus on a Stamkos, a Hedman, a Kucherov. But what happens when, you know, Goodrows are scoring goals, Coleman's are scoring goals, Johnson's and, you know, Maroon's are scoring goals. Now what do you do as a team? When up and down the lineup, they're able to look for not only the physicality. I mean, you've got so many players that, you know, can play that front of the net, in the corners, you know, tough, physical playoff style of hockey. You've got so many guys that can, you know, make plays, can handle the puck, can see the ice, and can finish on all those plays as well. So that depth is usually one of the hallmarks of the teams that you'll see make deep playoff runs.
Halsey, this is great. Have fun watching the game, covering the game tonight, and we'll talk to you down the road. Thank you again.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Adam.
All right, that is Adam Hall joining us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play, a guy who was somebody, Dave, that a gritty player that had some skill and, you know, could...
Really good on faceoffs, really good penalty killer. He was a first-round pick by Nashville, so he was a scorer at Michigan State, but his game evolved through his time in the NHL where he became one of those really reliable forwards, kind of like a Goodrow, right?
Bigger guy, can check.
Has to do very specific, you know, jobs, whether it was win key faceoff, penalty kill. When I asked him that question about Jordan Staal, I'd forgotten that he and Staal were teammates in Pittsburgh, and I certainly didn't know that they played penalty kill together. You probably did, but...
Now that you mention it, yes, it does bring back moments, Dave. Bring back
when
moments.
Jordan Staal was a young pup.
When he was a young pup.
In his first couple of years in the NHL.
He was. Jordan Staal, better now than he was with Pittsburgh, but he's kind of gotten back to, I think, the role he had in Pittsburgh. Because remember, when he first signed that deal with Carolina, he wanted to go and be a top six guy.
Yeah.
Really BB guy. Yeah. And I'm not sure Jordan Staal has ever been that guy, but he's just a really good player. You know, he's just, you win championships with guys like Jordan Staal. Maybe we can end on this, Dave. This is a tweet coming in, then we'll get some closing thoughts. Jake says, how much of a role do you think the Lightning's recent playoff experience / success play in their chances of closing it out tonight?
Well, they've not had a stellar record in some of these recent Game 5 situations when they've been up 3-1. I think in the last three series, going back to the bubble, they had a 3-1 lead and lost Game 5. Now, they always came back and won the sixth game. So I think it just goes to show that it's really tough to eliminate the other team. And the games have been close. I mean, the two games they lost in the bubble to the Islanders and to Dallas were overtime games, right? Double overtime, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
Both those Game 5 victories. The Game 5 loss in Sunrise was not an overtime loss, but it was a fairly close game. I mean, it was 1-1 late second, and then the Panthers scored to go up, and they locked it down in the third period. So I don't know how much experience is going to matter in terms of predicting the result, but I think experience can help related to what Adam Hall was talking about, what the Lightning should expect to see from Carolina at the start of this game, where they're going to let it all hang out, and they're going to want to get the lead, they're going to want to get the crowd engaged, they're going to want to make a strong push, and the Lightning have to be ready for that.
Jake, I'll answer it this way, because I think what you said makes sense, Dave. It might not show up tonight if they do lose. Where I think their experience will help them is understanding that they feel there's no way Carolina is going to win three straight games against us. That's how I'll kind of answer it. It might not be tonight. It might not be in Game 6.
They don't want to use the mulligan, but they've earned a mulligan.
They've earned a mulligan. You're
if
right.
They need it.
And I think this team...
Carolina has no mulligans left.
They don't. And I think that's why when we asked, you know, do you think you can rattle off basically three straight wins to beat Tampa Bay? I mean, you can. Yeah, for sure. But you're also hoping that the Lightning aren't at their best for three straight games. And I just think with an all-world goaltender, with the elite players that they do have. And then you factor, Jake, the experience factor into this equation. And then, you know, Carolina's banged up. I think it's asking a lot. And so that's where I say might not happen tonight, but I think it'll allow them to close out this series sooner rather than later. Let's just put it that way. And then from there, we reevaluate and break down this team moving forward. But I like their chances tonight, and that's probably more of a compliment to Tampa Bay than it is a knock on Carolina. And we'll see how it all plays out. Coverage will begin tonight starting at 5:30. Brian Burns and Kaylee Chelios have the pregame skate show. I will have the network pregame show at 6. And, of course, Dave and Phil have the call at 6:30. Brian Engblom and I are going to have the last call after the game, so an opportunity to reflect and talk about this game coming up. And hopefully we're talking about the Lightning winning and advancing, because this is the best time of the year, and anytime you're team has a chance to advance, it's always fun. So we'll have that for you, Dave. Appreciate the hockey talk, and I'll talk to you in a few hours.
Talk to you in a few hours. Thank you, Greg.
All right, that's Dave Mishkin. I'm Greg Linelli. Thanks to Steve Ersnick. Thanks to Adam Hall. We always appreciate it. Join us at 5:30 as our pregame show coverage begins. And then, of course, Dave and I are going to wrap everything up tomorrow, noon to 1 on Power Lunch, right here, everybody, on Lightning Power Play.